Hello, and welcome to the History of Haiti. So in the last two episodes, I've covered stories that can be considered extended tangents, which diverge from the main political narrative of Haitian history. In this episode, we will return to that main narrative of Haitian history. This episode will be building up to the revolt that will overthrow Boye, so the next episode, that revolt will happen, leading to renewed political instability. So in the elections of 1838, which I talked about in the last real episode, several hardcore liberal opposition members were elected, and along with them, many softer and nominally opposition members who leaned on the side of the opposition, but who would break for Boye when push came to shove. They were also elected. The way the House of Representatives worked was that it would meet for a few months every year. In the session of 1838, the House of Representatives had not been aggressive towards Boye, but in the legislative session of 1839, the opposition returned to the House eager to fight with Boye. Gerard Dumas, the leader of the opposition, who I introduced a few episodes ago, was elected president of the House. The opposition adopted a confrontational and aggressive posture towards Boye, and for his part, Boye chose to avoid opposing laws to them. When he sent a list of candidates to replace a vacancy in the Senate, they refused to elect from that list of candidates, complaining that the list should be longer according to the Constitution. The opposition also began giving fiery speeches denouncing Boye and his despotism. This appeased the audience, which now gathered to watch these meetings. The opposition, while posing little real threat to him or his administration, was starting to get on Boye's nerves. Many of his ministers began arguing for violence and to forcefully crush the opposition. But Boye was no Dessalines or Christophe, and he didn't want to be a true military dictator. These calls for violence managed to both outrage the hardcore opposition while scaring the weak opposition. So instead, Boye decided to non-violently purge the government of the opposition. On October 4th, Boye dismissed the members of the administration who were from the opposition. Then, to try to quell the revolutionary spirit of the opposition, he decreed a completely unenforceable ban on political discussion and shut down an opposition newspaper funded by the government. Then, Boye moved on to the House of Representatives. He convinced most of the delegates, who were likely intimidated by his complete control of the army, to break with the opposition. 21 of the 37 present delegates left the House of Representatives and created their own competing house. Soon, another 10 came and joined them. These 31 delegates declared themselves to be the real House of Representatives, elected a new president and secretaries, and then declared that the six other opposition delegates were expelled from the House. A coda to this was that Gerard Dumas soon left the capital for his hometown, but he and his co-leader of the opposition were arrested on their way back to Lacaille because they were mistaken for vagabonds. Boye, however, ordered them free. This was the third time a member of the opposition had been expelled from the House of Representatives, and the opposition was done with it. This purge, doing the opposite of Boye's intentions, actually energized the opposition and helped them grow. The opposition was obviously infuriated, and now they began spreading their message throughout Haiti. New opposition clubs and newspapers opened, and people became more politically aware. For example, in Jeremy, the local resentment against the government caused a school teacher to organize for a medal to be given to Dumas, but he was soon fired. And, as we will get to later in this episode, the opposition will use the spirit and drive to win the elections of 1842. With the opposition now gone, Boye could get back to getting the House of Representatives to pass his laws. So, in 1840 and 1841, Boye crammed a bunch of laws through the Haitian House of Representatives. One of these laws, meant to appease the opposition, decreed that Boye should construct a mausoleum for Alexandre Petion, who had by now become the patron saint of the opposition. These laws also included some modifications to the civil code of laws, which I did not mention, but actually a while ago, Boyer had created and standardized a code of laws and a judicial system in Haiti. One of Boyer's great achievements was this creation of and standardization of a code of laws in Haiti, which ruled for so long. Another thing that would last very long, incredible transition, I know, was the problems Haiti had with foreign governments. Just because Haiti and France had concluded a treaty did not mean that Boyer's foreign problems were over. As would become more common in the late 19th century, many foreigners and foreign diplomats often looked down on Haiti and tried to take advantage of Haiti. Of course, that's not to say all, or even most at the time, foreigners looked down on Haiti, but many did. In 1841, one of these foreigners ended up causing a diplomatic crisis between France and Haiti. So there was this French guy who thought he could make a quick buck by counterfeiting Haitian currency, a practice which was pretty common among Haitians. Anyway, the French consul, a guy named Lavasseur, found out and told Boyer. The counterfeiter was, of course, caught. But a new opposition newspaper called The Manifest, which I will get back to in a second, criticized Lavasseur's conduct in the affair. Lavasseur, when he saw this, was outraged. He demanded that Injunac arrest the editor of The Manifest. When Injunac, and then Boyer, hesitated to arrest this guy, Lavasseur threatened a breach of relations between France and Haiti. Lavasseur then hit up the French government and had them order warships to be sent to Haiti. Boyer was willing to back down, though, and he had the editor arrested and fined 80 gourds. When the French warships arrived, the French commander met with Boyer, and Boyer explained what was going on. The French commander completely took Boyer's side and did not approve at all of Lavasseur's temper tantrum. So he organized for the French government to replace Lavasseur, putting an end to this brief crisis. This would not be the last time something like this were to happen. One of the driving factors of the coming political instability was Boyer's economic policy. This created a class of elites hungry for wealth and power who saw the government as the way to get that. So the breakdown of the plantation economy had meant that most of the large plantations owned by wealthy elites had been broken up or abandoned. This meant that a large number of wealthy colored elites were looking for a way to once again get back their riches. One of the places these guys turned to was to become merchants. A lot of money was tied up with the exports of Haitian luxury goods like coffee. But soon, smelling blood in the water, foreign merchants began operating in Haiti and slowly taking over the merchant trade. Side note, these foreign merchants from the start especially included Germans, a nationality which would eventually become a force in Haitian politics. Anyway, these white foreigners were a bone of contention between the colored elites and the opposition because many conservatives wanted to invite them in and give them property rights, while the opposition was disgusted at all the foreigners. Anyway, back to the Haitian elites. Laurent Dubois, in his book, Haiti, the Aftershocks of History, makes the point that many of these elites and ambitious men looked towards the government as a way to gain immense wealth and power. To quote him, quote, the large number of aspirants to state power in turn made those who did have control of the state particularly concerned with holding on to it, unquote. This leads me to another point, Boyer's military. I previously said that one of the important things that Boyer did was his choice not to demobilize. Well, this is only half true. The way the lowest ranks of the Haitian military were was as a militia. There was no standing army. Instead, there was a bunch of guys who had other jobs and were paid small amounts to meet on Sundays to train. These guys would occasionally be summoned to go on campaign or to fight, but this was rare during Boyer's stable rule. Meanwhile, the highest ranks of the army, i.e. all the officers, were given control of the administration of the country. They ran all these cities, communes, and districts in place of a regular civilian government. This somewhat established the precedent that the power was based in the military. It also meant that most of these guys began losing loyalty to Boyer, meanwhile having their own independent bases of power. Despite the defeat in the House of Representatives, the opposition was not deterred, and in fact, were only embittered and egged on. So, in the elections of 1842, the opposition went all out in the Haitian House of Representatives. Throughout urban centers across the country, the opposition organized political action and campaigns to get themselves elected. For example, in Port-au-Prince, the newspaper called The Manifest ran a large political campaign. Two of these articles, on Haitian politics and economics, were then distributed across the country. This showed the urban elites and the common people why they should vote for the opposition. In Port-au-Prince, they published the lists of Port-au-Prince residents registered to vote and launched a campaign to get people registered to vote. All three deputies from Port-au-Prince were from the opposition. Similar campaigns were run across Haiti as the emboldened opposition grew and grew. In almost every major city, opposition members won the elections. Gerard Dumas was, of course, reelected. That said, the majority of Haitians did not care much for democratic politics, but of those who did, the majority sided with the opposition. When they came to the House of Representatives in 1842, the opposition had won, and now it was time for their real showdown with Boyer. So in 1842, Haiti was on the verge of a new wave of revolt and revolution, but it likely did not appear like that to anybody at the time. For 24 years, Boyer had had an incredibly stable rule, and the idea of a, spoiler alert, rapid-fire series of coups, revolts, and assassinations that left five different presidents in charge in nearly as many years sounded crazy. So to end this episode, I want to summarize the revolutionary forces brewing in Haiti, ready to explode once the head was cut off the beast. The first and most anti-revolutionary of these people was the one I talked about earlier, the ambitious class of elites. These colored elites angled for power, influence, and cushy jobs inside the Senate, military, and presidency. In addition, many of these elites were pretty corrupt, viewing the government as a way to get rich. Under Boyer, they were relatively loyal to his regime. But once Boyer fell, these elites would all try to take over the government. Then, of course, there was the liberal opposition. These were reformers and revolutionaries who despised Boyer and his whole autocratic system. They were young and energetic and wanted to remake Haiti in a new democratic way. They were a new generation who wanted to overthrow the old order. These liberals also mostly drew from the urban elites. They also, like almost everyone else, despised the deal Boyer had made with the French, and they were ready to fight Boyer, metaphorically or literally. As a more extreme version of the liberal opposition, there were the black supremacists. These guys did not just hate Boyer and his despotic ways, they hated the entire colored aristocracy, which they saw as oppressive. They saw the coloreds as the new French, who had just sold the country to their white brothers. Many of these guys openly dreamed of genocide against the coloreds and to establish a new black republic. There was a lot of overlap between these groups, and one of the big overlaps was between the black supremacists and the old Christophe loyalists. A decade of independence from the South and propaganda created by Christophe had convinced many Northerners that the North should be its own state, ruled not by the Southern coloreds, but by the Northern black elites. Many also believed that the old Christophe order needed to be reestablished. These Christophe loyalists, most importantly, remained key officers in the Northern army, which had little loyalty to Boyer. Finally, and most importantly, there was the rural peasants. Boyer, through his Code Rural, had created a massive division in Haiti between the rural peasants and the urbaners. the former with much stricter laws about what they could do, less government help, and more government repression. These rural peasants were angry not just at Boye, but at the entire government. They were sick of the repressive Code Rural, which tried to and failed to regulate their lives. They were sick of Boye's weird prison system, which have neglected, but which was very repressive. And they, like everyone else, loathed watching their tax money going to French bankers and military elites. Next episode, these revolutionary forces will explode, overthrowing Boye.